attitude that is revealed in a recent Portland Tribune article in which the mayor states, quote, downtown is the most logical place to grow. All of the growth we can accommodate there is growth that doesn't have to go into neighborhoods, end quote. Please take note. Downtown is a neighborhood for thousands of people who share the same concerns regarding proportionate livability through design and density. Number three, MVP Capital chose GBD Architects to head the design of their River Place development. Conveniently, Catherine Schultz, a GBD principal, is also the chairperson of the Planning Commission. The appearance of conflicts is disturbing. We feel overshadowed by investors and developers who seek to define what will become iconic in Portland's near and historic future. We oppose diminishing the nature of our waterfront forever. We urge City Council to reject this amendment. Thank
you. Very good. Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler and Commissioners. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. I'm Amber Bowl, full-time resident of South Downtown with my husband and twin toddlers. I'm here to express my opposition to Amendment Volume 2A, Part 1, Number 7, River Place Bonus Height. My concerns lie in the dramatic increase in population density without a plan for infrastructure support and a recognition of the impact and unintended consequences within my neighborhood. My number one concern is excessive density. The amendment will enable the developer to construct a complex five times the size of the next largest residential complex in the area. Adding to the existing residents, this area will contain over 7,000. This is equivalent to the size of Hood River. Number two concern, infrastructure overload. This development will overstress the marginal transit system of an overcrowded and slow streetcar and one bus line. The congested street traffic will further impede both. And access to Max requires a half-mile walk to a station. The streets of Moody Avenue and River Parkway are near capacity. I worry about the added traffic on Harbor Drive. On outings, the kids and I in my double stroller cross Harbor Drive, which is already very frightful. The impact on major arteries in and out of the city may be paralyzing. And personally, over the last 5 years, my commute on I-5 has doubled, taking away precious time from my family. My third concern is safety. Currently, there are three fire stations serving the west side downtown. Does this growth and density jeopardize the safety of the area and surrounding community? Would emergency services be able to reach my children in time when needed most? I am not opposed to responsible and safe growth, but this amendment feels careless and lacks an understanding of and solution to its crucial consequences. Thank you for the opportunity, and I hope you will consider my family's safety and concerns.
Very good. And if I could just state for the record so there's no confusion, should any developer seek to build within whatever guidelines we choose for that particular area, they still have to go through the entire planning and development process. So all of those issues, transportation, safety, egress, all of that still comes into play. Okay. And I do want to directly address the question of bias. You're right. I was not particularly eloquent in the way that I stated that. Oftentimes I'm asked, you know, a microphone gets shoved in my face and somebody says, what's your view of the world? And then I regret the exact choice of words. But I want to tell you what I've been saying for the last several years, which is I do support density, particularly in housing. We need more so-called missing middle housing. We need more workforce housing. We need more affordable housing, lower income housing. There will be increased density because we already made that decision when we chose to locate within an urban growth boundary to preserve forest land and farmland on the periphery. So we already agreed to increase density. Now the question is, where does the density go? There are some areas where density is more appropriate than others, and I've been very clear about what my own personal hierarchy is. The central city is the best place for increased density and increased housing. Transit-oriented corridors, town centers are a close second. There will also be density in the more currently single-family residential neighborhoods, and we've pursued strategies there as well. We'll be taking up the infill, the residential infill strategy. We've supported the auxiliary dwelling unit strategy. There are strategies within this plan that actually address increased density in neighborhoods outside of the central city area. So all of that is on the table. And I did not in any way mean to imply that I do not understand that downtown is a very important and robust community and neighborhood. I simply believe and maybe have a difference of opinion with you insofar as I believe the central city is exactly where the most density should be. That's my official view of the world, but I appreciate your raising it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next three, please.
Was Bob Shoemaker coming? Bob Shoemaker, Terry Parker, and Gerson Raboy. And they'll be followed by 12, Trish Nixon, Brian Wilson, and Eric Gress, 12, 13, and 14.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Commissioners.
Thank you for being here.
Pleased to be here. I'm not pleased about why we're here. I'm a member of a small coalition that has arisen in the South Waterfront, or our portion of the waterfront of the river, who disagree with the proposal that the height limit be expanded originally to 400 feet, now to something somewhat less than that, but a lot more than is presently there. Mrs. Shoemaker and I are residents of the River Place condominiums, which are immediately across Montgomery from the site that is proposed to have the new height limits. River Place condominiums comprises, there are eight buildings surrounding beautiful courtyards, all low rise, three or four stories, 190 condominium units. So it's a very pleasant neighborhood right on the Willamette River in a very Portland-like sort of a place. If the high-rises are allowed in what are now rental units of similar architecture, it's just a matter of probably a fairly short period of time before this will occur. And River Place, as we know it, and the 190 people that live there will be displaced by more high-rises. This really is, in a way, the camel's nose under the tent. Once you start high-rises and discard the plan for stepping down to the river, I think the city is committed to doing that again and again and again. And I think to do this is to place great risk on River Place, and there are probably other places along the Willamette River, which are so much a part of Portland, that will be replaced by high-rises. So I'm, among others, asking you to not do this. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Gerson Raboy. I'm a homeowner in the Hosford Abernathy neighborhood. I've lived in Portland since 1965. I want to speak in favor of the least restriction of building heights, and that is a whole collection of items in this list, number 7, number 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, and 23. Some of those have to do with view corridors. We need more. We have a crisis in housing costs in Portland. It's related to a crisis in homelessness and a loss of demographic diversity, and we simply need more density. I want to advocate for the least restriction of building heights because we need to accommodate for the growth of the city, and we need more housing to meet the demand in order to contain costs. And I feel that the trade-off, especially with view corridors, is just is not worth it, simply put.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. Good afternoon.
Terry Parker, Northeast Portland. A livable, connected city is a city where mobility is not constricted. An equitably healthy city is a city where infrastructure users pay their fair share for what they specifically utilize. Portland fails on all fronts. On TR 120, I'm in favor of this freeway expansion. It's really not an expansion, it's just adding weave lanes. You hear from a lot of bicyclists, motorists are left out of the process. Bicyclists don't use the freeway, motorists do. If anything, it'll cut down on the fender benders, be safety, be safer, safer freeway, and you won't have the congestion from the fender benders. But I feel it shouldn't have tolls. This is without tolls. That's discrimination. And given that motorists subsidize other modes, they already pay more than their fair share. And this all coincides with the third highest response from a how to improve the quality of life question on a recent Metro poll, congestion. In Oregon, a bicycle is considered a vehicle. Providing dedicated pavement space to accommodate bicycle travel like the Green Loop is a privilege. To establish equity health, amendments to increase bicycle connectivity, including the Green Loop, need to have a reference to charging adult bicyclists some kind of privilege or registration fee for the creation, use, and maintenance of the dedicated pavement space. Continuing to siphon off gas tax dollars is inequitable. You're giving bicycles a free pass, and that would be volume 2B, 2, 4, 6, 8, anything that includes adding bicycle infrastructure. Finally, on volume 2A, number 16, 10, and 7, I agree with Commissioner Fritz that step-down maximum building properties closer to the Willamette River need to be maintained, and this includes the Willamette Bridgehead. The amendment also appears to uphold the policy that calls for improving access to and from the central city on the regional freeway system. Thank you, Amanda.
Thank you, Terry. You meant the Wes Morrison Bridgehead, is that
correct? Yes. Did I say east or something else? I apologize. West in the testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your testimony. Next three, please.
Are Trish Nixon, Brian Wilson, and Eric Kress. And they'll be followed by 15, 16, and 17, Stephen Salomon, Daniel Salomon, and Sherry Salomon.
Good afternoon. Would you like to go ahead
Good
and start
afternoon.
For us?
Sure. Thank you. Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler and City Council. My name is Trish Nixon, and I'm a managing principal with LRS Architects. I'm responsible for our multifamily housing studio. We have been involved in the design of more than 1,000 multifamily housing units in the last 5 years and are currently working on several projects within the Central City. My testimony is related to the Central City Plan District Amendment Number 4. I request that the current requirement to transfer FAR in order to build up to the allowable height be eliminated so that maximum density can be more readily reached without the added and unnecessary financial burden that transfer has on projects. The taller height limits in the Central City allow for a lot of density and greater opportunities to provide more affordable housing units. The additional 3-to-1 FAR bonus for the inclusion of affordable housing units in a project is a great way to prioritize affordable units. But in order to utilize that development in full, the building would need to be high-rise construction. The reality is high-rise construction adds a significant cost to a project and in and of itself often requires the maximum density in order for the project to financially make sense. Every cost added to a project impacts the viability of that project. Allowing property owners to build up to the maximum height without the extra cost burden of an FAR transfer after they have met the affordable housing requirement will improve the chances that a larger project will be built, therefore increasing the opportunities for more affordable living units within the Central City and larger public benefits that come with the increased housing from SDC and CET fees to property taxes. For those reasons, I urge you to adopt the Oregon Locust requested amendment to remove the transfer requirement for building up to the allowed height. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Commissioners, Mayor. My name is Brian Wilson, resident of Southwest Portland, also a business owner, Mainland Northwest. We specialize in developing workforce and affordable housing as well as college housing in the Central City. I'm here to speak specifically on Amendment 4, which, by the way, I do support. I think it is an improvement. But I would like to request that you consider the Locust proposed amendment to remove the restriction on transfer and FAR and the expense. Simply put, I think it's urgently needed in the Central City in order for us to be allowed to build to the maximum height. There are several sites that I'm working on currently, in fact, one that I hope to be bringing to all of you very soon that would support affordable artist live workspace in the downtown core. But the site that we're considering would require the ability to do the FAR transfer and any additional expense added to the project, which, by the way, will probably be financed with public facility bonds. might make it not pencil. So I would urge you to consider that amendment. I'm really pleased that you are going to bring additional FAR up as a conversation later in the year. That's fantastic. But this specifically refers to existing FAR that we already have. Thank you for your time. I yield.
Thank you. Commissioner Fritz.
Well, I just want to put out there that what we've been talking about is expanding the government's ability, City of Portland's ability, to provide additional FAR through the transfer program. And that could have multiple benefits, including potentially choosing affordable housing projects to sell to at discount rates. So that's what we're looking at. And so it's just allowing to build to the total height wouldn't necessarily get us all the benefits that you just mentioned. And so that's part of what the mayor and I will be working on over the rest of this year, is seeing what we can do in terms of a package proposal.
I appreciate those comments. I just would like to emphasize that any flexibility that we can have in the system, I think, will help us build to the density goals that the city has established. And that's certainly my priority.
Thank you.
And Mr. Wilson, you're somebody who has been actively engaged in this kind of development, and we would very much like the opportunity to reach out to you and get your expert insights and opinions on this process as well as it unfolds.
I am at your disposal.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Good afternoon.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Eric Kress. I am a partner and founder of Urban Development Partners. We're a sustainably focused, community-oriented developer based here in Portland. I am also speaking today in support of the Locus Amendment to which addresses Amendment Number 4. In essence, this amendment would allow for the building of additional market rate and affordable housing when projects meet the 3-to-1 FAR bonus requirements while staying within property height and limits. Again, the 3-to-1 bonus requirements are affordable housing requirements and seismic life safety requirements. Importantly, employing this allowance for central city buildings that are already subject to design review would provide additional needed housing without compromising urban form. And considering the dire need for additional private funds to build our housing infrastructure, any policy that is accretive to our housing supply without compromising design quality is needed and consistent with the city's goals. This amendment would directly affect one project currently in our pipeline and certainly future projects, adding to the city's supply of affordable housing without additional tax burden, and in fact would provide additional property tax revenue. In addition, I'd like to speak, request reconsideration of the Salmon Springs View Corridor, referenced as CCSW-17 in the Central City Plan. As a building owner and resident of Portland, I certainly value the views of our beautiful scenic resources and quietly lament when they are blocked by construction around my home and my own office. However, I value transit-oriented affordable housing and jobs more than views, especially for views that are only available about 90 days out of the year. Taking a position for the luxury of scenic views over housing or jobs is inconsistent with our city's goals, especially in a time when affordable housing is so scarce. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. Thanks. Next three, please, Carla.
Are Stephen Daniel and Sherry Solomon, and they'll be followed by 18, 19, and 20. Eric Simon, Elizabeth, I'm sorry, I can't read the last name, on Southwest 19th, and Tran Prince.
The three of us would like to share the 6 minutes, not necessarily, so if you could just sort of have the bell go off at the end, would that be okay?
That's fine.
Thank you.
I figure if you went through all the trouble of wearing the same shirt, that's
yes,
the least I could do.
We did,
the
because
I could do.
We live in Goose Hollow, and we're wearing our Goose Hollow shirts to show support for our neighborhood.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you. My family is here to...
Sorry, you have to state your name for the record.
Oh, our name. Sherry Solomon.
Stephen Solomon.
Daniel Solomon.
Thank you.
My family is here today to beg City Council to keep cherished public views protected. Don't privatize views of Mount Hood and the Vista Bridge so that only those rich enough to live in the buildings blocking the view can see them. Those are not Portland values. There are fewer and fewer places where the public can enjoy the views of Mount Hood. The Central City 2035 plan removes over 60 public views that we enjoy today. 10 Mount Hood views will be lost along the river. We know that development is necessary, so we're only asking to save one of those views. Please vote for Mayor Wheeler's amendment to save the incredibly important Mount Hood view from Salmon Springs Fountain.
Yes. Mayor Wheeler, you seem to put a lot of stock in the idea that the Planning Commission already carefully considered this view and voted not to protect it. But they didn't carefully consider this view. We were there. Are you aware that the Planning Commission chair said she was unaware that there's a view of Mount Hood at Salmon Springs Fountain? She was very dismissive and acted as if this was a view no one knows about. I'd like to remind you that the view of Mount Hood from Salmon Springs is the main image used for Travel Portland's marketing materials to sell Portland around the world. The Planning Commission chair lives in Lake Oswego and doesn't know this basic fact about Portland. This makes you wonder why we have non-Portland residents serving on such important committees. This woman heads the commission that votes on heights and views and doesn't even know about one of the most important views in Portland. This is a highly developed view site with telescopes and an amphitheater to enjoy the view. An Eastside property owner told the commission that residents could always go to Council Crest to see Mount Hood, a place less accessible by public transportation. This was an idea that the Planning Commission thought was reasonable. The prevailing attitude was, just go to Council Crest if you'd like to see Mount Hood, a place which I like to reiterate is a place less accessible by public transportation. I'm not rich. I am on disability and live in Section 8 housing. I'm also a canary in the coal mine that there is so much more at stake with these issues than just access to beauty. This view corridors, eliminating view corridors, also impact human health, dignity, and community. Will you plan for a city where there is egalitarian access to views, or will you plan for a city where views are only for the rich?
Salmon Springs Fountain is visited by thousands of tourists each week, and will add more than $5 billion annually to our economy and thousands of jobs. You only need to lower heights on a few properties to save this last view of Mount Hood from the Willamette River. The view of Mount Hood from the Vista Bridge will only be one of the snow cap. We're asking to save today's view, which shows a beautiful contrast between the low slopes and the snow cap. We're also asking to save the view of the weather beacon, which can be clearly seen from the bridge. Will only take lowering the heights slightly on 8 properties to keep the beacon unblocked. Please add an amendment to save this view.
Please vote for the amendment by Commissioners Frist and Udaly to save views of the Vista Bridge. You set heights at today's heights, but that won't keep buildings from blocking the bridge. You can fix that by lowering heights a few feet more and making the zone with lowered heights wider. Today, the bridge can be seen from many parts of the city because building heights are low for 4 full blocks next to the bridge. You'll also need to add back the protected view from I-405 down Southwest Jefferson, since that was taken away in the last draft. For those of us who aren't rich enough to live in a building blocking views of the bridge, we shouldn't have to stand in the middle of the street underneath the bridge to see the arch. There's lots of money at stake. Conflicted SAC members will gain approximately $50 to $100 million in increased profits because of the increased heights they voted to give themselves. Please vote for Commissioner Fritz's amendment to lower bridgehead heights, which will go a small way toward addressing heights that were gained unethically. But it will also prevent enormous shadows across the waterfront park and keep the riverfront from being walled off and privatized. We speak for retirees, for disabled people, and for low-income people. We hope you listen to us and not just the wealthy developers who donate to your campaigns. We should have a voice here. We should all have access to views rather than having them blocked off for private viewing by the very rich. Please vote for the average resident and not for those who stand to gain the most financially. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, all three of you.
Welcome.
Next three, please.
are Eric Snow, Elizabeth Cooksey, and Tran Prince. And they'll be followed by 21, 22, 23, Elizabeth Hart Morris, Donner Johnson, and Bob Solinger.
Good afternoon. Would you like to go ahead and start, please?
Eric Simon.
Thank you.
Elizabeth Cooksey.
Thank you.
Tracy Prince.
Thank you.
Hi, we're with the Goose Hollow Foothills League, the Neighborhood Association. Goose Hollow is one of the densest neighborhoods in all of Oregon. We're very proud of the fact that half of our board is low income and half are renters, and that reflects our neighborhood demographics. We're representing a unanimous Goose Hollow position. We've seen that the more Goose Hollow fights for what's best for all residents in ways that cost developers millions, the more vicious the personal attacks. I was defamed online again this week. I have a view of Mount Hood, and no proposed height in Central City 2035 will affect my view. I and my fellow board members aren't fighting for personal gain. We're fighting for every Portlander who hasn't had time for 3 years of reading thousands of pages of code every 6 months in order to understand how much views are being privatized and how much ethically conflicted developers are being enriched. Mayor Wheeler, your amendment would keep Mount Hood views from being privatized at Salmon Springs. However, you seem hesitant. You said that you trust the Planning and Sustainability Commission decision. We feel you shouldn't trust it. Their decision won only by one vote. The commissioners were heavily influenced by a developer who consistently votes for policy that will make his business the most money. And they were persuaded by the chair, who claimed that there isn't a good view here. What does she know? She lives in Lake Oswego. Here's the view. It's stunning. It's used by Travel Portland as the iconic image marketing Portland around the world for conventions and tourism. It's crazy to decide that private profits are worth more than public access to this view, which is downtown's last public view of Mount Hood. CC 2035 removes 10 other views of Mount Hood from along the river, and we're only fighting for one. We think we're being very reasonable by focusing only on the one big view to save. Travel Portland sent you a letter advocating to save this view, and we agree with them. Tourism brings billions of dollars to Portland, and most tourists go to this spot. It will only take lowering heights on a few properties. Vote for egalitarian access to the last public view of Mount Hood from downtown. Thank you, Commissioners Fritz and Udaly, for trying to protect this from happening with your amendment. This is what views of the Vista Bridge will be like with the proposed heights, but you call for going back to today's heights,
which many people have argued would allow for buildings to block the bridge. We're asking to lower heights slightly from what you've proposed, 25 feet from the bridge to southwest 20th and 35 feet from 20th to 18th. And we're asking for the middle section of lowered heights to be wider, covering the entire block next to the bridge to the north and south of Jefferson, so that the bridge won't be walled in by buildings. Also, the view corridor from I-405 to the bridge was removed in a previous draft. It seems like language should be added back to make sure that I-405 to the bridge is clearly stated as a protected view. City Council already agreed to protect the view of the Vista Bridge when you adopted the West Quadrant Plan, one of its five urban design policies specifically named the Vista Bridge, and committed to elevate the presence, character, and role of this significant public view corridor which defines the district. Policy 5.4 of this draft commits to preserving views of the Vista Bridge. Policy 5.7 commits to preserving gateways. Please keep this magnificent gateway from being blocked by buildings. Please vote for the lower heights for at least four blocks near the bridge. We're asking for an amendment to protect today's view of Mount Hood from Vista Bridge and the view of the weather beacon. In this photo, the view is being used as a backdrop by a middle school's morning show. This vista from the Vista Bridge is important to Portland's sense of place. We are asking you to lower heights only slightly, four floors on approximately eight properties. It won't take much. In order to be able to see the charming weather beacon from the Standard Insurance Building, it would only take this slight lowering of allowable height. Many residents have told us about walking across the bridge and looking to see what the weather beacon predicts.
On all views, it is shocking to see that the ESSE, Economic, Social, Environmental, and Energy Analysis, developed by BPS staff, has no metric to measure views that are so iconic that they've appeared on Portland postcards and promotional materials for over a century. In their analysis, private profits for developers will always be weighted more than the public good of egalitarian access to views. We appreciate Mayor Wheeler's amendment that fixes typos related to Goose Hollow and the historic district's incorrect heights. This is a simple oversight, and we're glad it was caught. As reported in the Northwest Examiner, the Ombudsman found that the West Quadrant Stakeholder Advisory Committee members, public officials, were unethical. They voted to give themselves millions of dollars by increasing heights on their own properties. You recently voted to require stronger ethics in stakeholder advisory groups. You said that knowing someone's conflict of interest was enough for you, that you would take care of the rest by voting in a way that understands that a conflict took place. So, you've been given overwhelming evidence that conflicts of interest took place during the Central City 2035 process, yet you haven't lowered the heights that these people voted to give themselves. You should rescind all heights given to these developers in this ethically compromised process. We don't think Portland should be doing business this way. We support Commissioner Fritz's amendment to reduce heights at the bridgehead, but we believe that many other heights were obtained in ethically compromised ways and should be rescinded. We've discussed these views in dozens of public meetings over a three-year period. We've heard from our disabled and low-income residents that public access to views means a lot to them. Please represent all Portland residents and not just the developers. Thank you.
Thank you. Next three, please.
Are Elizabeth Hart Morris, Donner Johnson, and Bob Solinger. And they'll be followed by 24, 25, and 26, Maria Cahill, Pat Lando, and Tom Lipton.
Is this the first 21?
Oh, yeah. Any seats good? Thank you. Would you like to go ahead and start, please?
Sure.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Elizabeth Hart Morris. I am a co-founder and the executive director of the Green Roof Info Think Tank, also called GRIT. GRIT is a Portland nonprofit dedicated to supporting the use of green roofs through education and outreach to heal our environment and to heal ourselves. On behalf of GRIT, we applaud and fully support the Council's inclusion of an eco-roof requirement in the Central City Plan. We support the Council's amendments adopted earlier this month, and GRIT also supports the recent inclusion of a rainwater harvest equipment in the 40% exemption, but no more. No more than the 40% is what I mean. GRIT is prepared to support the City of Portland, BPS, the development and design community, building owners, and install and maintenance contractors affected by the amendment. We provide green roof tours, education, research, as well as green roof symposia to help foster consistent adoption and use of green roofs across Portland. Thank you for the opportunity to provide comment, and thank you so much for your influence on the future of Portland. Please feel free to contact GRIT for more information, research, and we also invite you all, to join our spring green roof tours and presentations that GRIT will provide. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Good. Does GRIT have a website that people could find out about that?
Greenrooftinktank.org. Greenrooftinktank.org.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, and thank you for my chance to be here. My name is Downer Johnson, and I'm a member of the South Downtown Neighborhood Development Coalition. I'm here to speak in opposition to Amendment 7, the River Place Bonus Height. This is an amendment which came into being, as I understand it, partly as a result of something called the Vision Booklet, which was distributed by NBR developers. I've looked at this booklet, or at least parts of it, and it has what I would call laudatory, maybe questionable information. For example, it shows buildings from a side view, and there are buildings in that side view that don't exist and might never exist. I understand that they're doing an assumption about 2035, but what it does is mitigate the actual effect, the step-down effect that we have all agreed on in document 2035. Secondly, I'd like to say that it's been said that this is not a case of spot zoning, but it obviously is a case of spot zoning since it's an exception to 2035, and it will definitely open the door to other developers who want to see if they can get the same kind of advantage. It reminds me of what happened in San Francisco when I lived there in the 60s and the Transamerica Pyramid was built, which pierced the written and unwritten agreements that citizens had about building height. And, of course, anyone who's seen San Francisco knows what has happened there. Another question, and actually I have a question for all of you, and that is this. I understand that 500-odd rentals will be built. These are rentals, so the building is entirely rentals. Is there anything to prevent the developer from converting these to condominiums at some later date? Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Bob Salinger. I'm the Conservation Director for the Audubon Society of Portland. We submitted some pretty extensive comments. I'll go through some of those today. First, we want to support Volume 2A, Amendment 8, the BirdSafe window standard amendments. That moves some of the technical details to administrative rules but retains flexibility. We think that's the right way to go. So we encourage you to do that, but please don't put any additional restrictions beyond that. I think we can work out all the details in the administrative rules.
Bob, in terms of, and this won't count against your time, but in terms of preserving flexibility, how many different kinds of treatments are there out in the marketplace today?
There's probably about a dozen out there, and there's more coming on the market all the time.
So you want to have as much choice and flexibility as
we think it's important for developers. They serve different functions in addition to the BirdSafe goal, and we think it's important that developers have those different that flexibility to pick and choose, because some of them help with heating and cooling and other things as well, so aesthetics. So we think retaining flexibility for developers is an important aspect of this. Plus, the technology is changing. It's emerging quickly around this. It's an evolving field, and so keeping it in the administrative rules will allow us to add and subtract as new and better technologies come online.
And in response to the concern raised by Mr. Klotz earlier, some of these technologies do allow people to see in and out of the building?
They all allow people to see in and out of the building. Some of them are dots and lines on windows. It's things you see on buildings all the time right now. We've never heard of complaints around the country about those kinds of things. They're being instituted in a lot of cities right now. That's not why people can't see in and out. They're very minimal. They just break up the solid open glass field that birds crash into.
Thank you.
And there are some options that don't have any interference at all. Volume 2A, Amendment 9, ECO-RUs, we concur with GRID. I won't repeat those comments, but we concur with GRID. Please don't go any further than you're going right now. Volume 2B, 8, NATO Parkway expansion, we would urge you to look closely at the tree impacts on that. That's going to take out about 90 mature trees. And looking at the plans for that, we're concerned they're not going to be replaced with adequate replacements. It looks like one-to-one ratios and very small trees that won't have the same values. So if they're going to remove trees, one, we should try to avoid that, too. We should make sure that we replace them adequately if we do have to remove some. Volume 2B, Amendment 2, Rose Quarter expansion. You've heard from a lot of people. We also oppose this project. We do think it's a boondoggle. We think it's not consistent with the city's equity and environmental goals. We encourage you to think hard about going forward. I think it's going to be a big waste of money, and it will eventually collapse under its own weight. But the fears will spend a lot of money getting to that point, so please do continue to look closely at that. Lastly, I want to express my appreciation to Commissioner Fish for two amendments, 5A amendments 1 and 3, that require the city to look at how we encourage development to move out of the floodplain and at how we deal with light pollution. appreciate those being put in there and really encourage the city to fund that in the next budget cycle so we could move forward on those two initiatives. So thank you.
Mayor, can I give a preliminary response to the gentleman who asked about condo conversion?
Yes.
So please don't take this as the final word, but my understanding is that under the inclusionary housing rules, a developer has to agree to a 99-year covenant of affordability. And that can't be just taken off because the developer sees an opportunity to convert to condos. That's the quid pro quo. That's required by the program. But I'll try to drill down a little further for you. But I wanted to give you reassurance that it is not a program set up that someone can just, at their discretion, forfeit the public benefit that is required and convert to condos.
Mm-hmm.
That would not be allowed.
I know that some cities have instituted punitive conversion costs, taxes, to prevent that kind of thing happening.
Well, it would be a violation of the covenant, and the council would,
in this case,
in this case, not look favorably on that. I'm sure there's all kinds of remedies if you violate the covenant.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you, all three of you.
The next three are Maria Cahill, Pat Lando, and Tom Lipton, and they'll be followed by 27, 28, and 29, John Cumrine, Miles Sisk, and Aaron Brown.
Good afternoon.
Hi. My name is Maria Cahill, and I'm coming to speak on Volume 2A1, Amendment 9. I'm a program manager for RECODE, a Portland-based nonprofit funded to work on national efforts with a special focus on the West Coast. We work to accelerate the adoption of water reuse systems such as rainwater harvesting and gray and black water treatment. I'm testifying today to encourage you to incorporate water reuse regulations into the Central City 2035 plan and consider providing other permit pathways throughout the city that will allow us to use all kinds of water more than once in buildings. The steep roof exemption allows developers to use them to avoid building eGRO roofs. Requiring rainwater harvesting from steep slopes can bring new construction back into alignment with the CC 2035 goals and policies. We notice that water reuse policy language is mostly missing from the CC 2035 plan, and that even some barriers to it have been created, even though water reuse is a climate change resiliency tool that can help meet multiple goals. It can mitigate flooding, increasing storage capacity, and optimizing that storage using smart technology. Reused water requires a high level of treatment, so when it is discharged, it's highly protective of water quality and in-stream habitat. Low-carbon district energy systems can be enhanced with water reuse methane systems, which are already a cost-effective way for high-strength wastewater generators like breweries to save money on their sewer bills. Our very own Hassalo on 8th project in the Lloyd District demonstrates how water reuse can improve the pedestrian environment, reduce heat island effect, improve air and water quality, and create habitat for birds and pollinators. Even rain-soaked cities like Seattle now require rainwater harvesting. They know they must adapt to climate change by expanding their water portfolio. These cities are innovating to allow harvesting of stormwater, atmospheric condensate, and nuisance water, which is shallow groundwater that would flood buildings. 30 water experts from 13 states, including Oregon, serve on the National Blue Ribbon Commission for On-Site Non-Potable Water Systems and recently provided detailed guidance on a health-based approach for developing a water reuse permit program. Across the country, the accelerating adoption of water reuse systems is already happening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Pat Lando. I'm a landscape architect with my own firm, Lando & Associates Landscape Architecture. I live in a house entirely covered by an eco roof and 400 square feet of living wall. And ever since Tom Lipton's retirement, I'm now one of the longest practicing eco roof consultants in the country, along with Charlie Miller. And in fact, early engineering of some soils are a result of our collaboration. So I'm here to testify on two issues, one Amendment 2A, number 9, the eco-roofs, and a missing amendment for water reuse. First, I fully support the staff's addition on the eco-roofs but I would like to allow for additions as submitted to you guys on attachment. My review of these amendment languages creates an unintentional loophole for developers by allowing steep roofs, buildings to avoid meeting the goals and policies of the 2035 plan. The amendment also creates unintentional barriers not only to allow rainwater harvesting but emerging technologies. But by achieving LEED and sustainable sites, the Living Building Challenge, and potentially other metric programs that support sustainability in high-performance buildings. In conversations with staff, we anticipate that rainwater harvesting can be allowed to resolve some of these conflicts, including the steep roof exemption, while still meeting the multi-benefits found in eco-roofs. With the addition of my proposed language submitted, the city can achieve its goals of Policy 2035 plan. The second issue is I'm requesting the commission to direct staff through a motion to add amendment to include water reuse in the 2035 plan. I submitted to you on a second page a draft language from Seattle and San Francisco's most recent codes that allow the adoption this water reuse. The new amendments would address the 2035 goals and policy plans for resiliency, as well as building and infrastructure site development.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Tom Lipton. I'm the guy that came up with the idea of using eco-roofs for stormwater management. While working for the Bureau of Environmental Services, I first became aware of this stormwater management technique in 1992. In 1996, I installed an eco-roof on my garage and tested its rain management performance. It worked like a charm, and BES has confirmed this during the ensuing years with many monitoring projects. In 1999, under Commissioner Saltzman's leadership, BES helped install an eco-roof on the Hamilton Apartments for stormwater research purposes. This was the first commercial eco-roof in Portland, and it was on an affordable housing building. Studies on the Hamilton eco-roof and others have provided BES with valuable information about stormwater, biodiversity, energy, and economic viability of eco-roofs. One thing I'd like to add into this part of my testimony is that I think there needs to be a really comprehensive comparison of many benefits that are associated with green infrastructure, this one associated with the discussion of harvesting and eco-roofs and how that might come about to better understand what those values are. Anyway, before retiring from BES, I invented an eco-roof design, non-proprietary, that does not require irrigation. BES has about a dozen buildings with this design. The design is starting to find favor with private developers, and it's simple and cost-effective. I say this because a lot of people talk about the cost of eco-roofs and irrigation and various other maintenance issues. These are important depending on the circumstances or the context of the development. But many developers will want to, as they are doing right now, just put a roof on it and let me go on my way. And that can be seen on Division, on Hawthorne, various other places where lots of apartment buildings are going up. I have visited U.S. cities, and I guess I'm almost done. I just want to say I very much confidently and wholeheartedly support the Eco-Roof Code amendments, and I really want to thank all of you for your service and your consideration. And I want to thank everybody in this room because this is democracy in action. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. We appreciate it. Commissioner Fritz?
Yeah, I just wanted to say for those watching at home, sometimes we have people who testify, and I think people at home wonder, are they actually what they say they are, and you are actually what you say you are, Tom. Not only that, but you came to the Parks budget meetings this year, and that your ongoing public service is truly appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mayor.
Thank you. Thanks, all three of you. Commissioner Udaly.
I just have a quick question, actually. First of all, what a treat to have you here. Thank you for your innovation, early innovation.
Thank you.
I want to make sure that this eco-roof amendment is as strong as it can be, and I want to make sure that I understand the concerns about the steep roof exemption, because we have looked into this. So I'm going to read to you the staff response, and if you could give me some feedback, I would really appreciate that. So currently, developers are required to manage 100% of stormwater from rooftops, steep or flat. It's a sunk cost. It's less expensive to build a flat roof and use it to manage stormwater than to build a steep roof and find a different way to manage stormwater on site. BES will allow an eco roof on a steep rooftop. It just requires more engineering. This is why we don't require it, but it's allowed. And also, there was a concern that we would just have we would be requiring flat roofs all over the city, so we don't want to prevent people from building steep roofs. So is there language you're hoping that we're going to add or change? What's the remaining concern?
Go ahead.
Are you addressing?
And I understand that the harvesting rainwater is that's really kind of a separate issue, or reuse of water is somewhat of a separate issue. I'm really wanting to focus on the eco roof.
So if you were just to address the steep roof and the eco roof situation, what I believe when I read it and I interpret this would be that to avoid the additional cost of putting on an eco roof, a developer could very easily then just create a pitched roof, a 25% or greater pitched roof, and not do anything that would contribute to the Central City 2035 plan, right? It wouldn't provide the multiple benefits of an eco roof, and they would just sort of walk away. You're not mandating that they basically provide an as equal benefit that you're requiring the rest of the eco roofs covering flat roofs.
Sure.
So you're missing that by simply allowing a developer to sidestep it by building a steep roof. Does that make sense?
It does make sense, but Susan's shaking her head. The fact is a lot of developers want to have rooftop amenities, and I don't think that our eco-roof requirement is going to dissuade them of creating these amenities, and many of them want to do eco-roofs as well.
Uh-huh.
And it's more expensive to gather the rainwater from a steep roof.
Mm,
I'm just
it's
not
the same.
Sure. Okay. I don't think it is. I've got a bunch of shaking heads back there, but...
If I could just add, so a steep roof, it is more expensive to put an eco roof on that. And so that's perhaps why staff has said, well, you don't have to put it on a steep roof, just put it on a flat
right.
roof.
Yeah.
I really don't think it's necessary at all. Most of the buildings in the Central City area are not really going to be looking at building steep roofs, whether it's got an eco roof or not. My understanding of their point is that if you have this... exemption, then people are going to take advantage of it.
That's right.
Maybe a few will. It's hard to understand how many people will take advantage of. It could be taken advantage of, though. So perhaps the best solution is just to delete it. Delete reference to the slope of a roof. The language in that is here today says that 40% can be used. And I also wanted to clarify that harvesting rainwater from an eco roof is also possible, especially this time of year. There is runoff from eco roofs during the wintertime, so they can get water that way too.
Sure.
So it could be as simple as just taking that off. It would address their concerns. And if somebody wanted to do a steep roof, they would have to look at the possibility of saying, well, it looks like we'd have to put an eco roof on it. And then they might say, well, maybe we don't want to do that and we'll just do a regular roof. Steep meaning above 25%. Eco roofs are not that hard on lower slope roofs.
Okay.
It's been my experience.
Yeah, so I agree with what Tom was saying.
Okay. Thank
Great.
You.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you, all three of you. Next three, please, Carla.
Are John Crumrine, Miles Sisk, and Aaron Brown, and they'll be followed by 30, 32, and 33, Marilyn Weber, Cliff Weber, and Greg Wimmer.
Oh, the person before me is not here?
I guess not. Go for it.
Oh, well, I wasn't quite ready to talk yet.
Lucky you.
But I'll get started. Hi, everybody. My name is Miles Sisk. I want to speak more specifically on 2A, Section 10, and height caps in general. I'm 23. I live here downtown. I'm a renter, like 87%, much like 87% of the downtown neighborhood as well. I'm a seventh-generation Oregonian. My family came over on the Oregon Trail over 150 years ago and went south. I've got somewhere over 150 cousins back in the Rogue Valley. A lot of you city folk might not know this, but Portland for years has served as a beacon of hope and opportunity for my generation of rural Oregonians. Rural Oregon is gentrifying. There's not opportunity there for us anymore. There aren't jobs. There isn't much of an economy. Land prices are soaring because it's being bought up by people out of state. There's not a future for young rural Oregonians anymore. We're coming here. I came here 2 years ago for that opportunity as well. I know dozens of other young people just like me, people I went to high school with, people I went to college with, who are on the same track that I was. We're coming to Portland for opportunity, for hope, and for our chances. You're not going to hear us talking about height limits. You're not going to hear us talking about views. We're too busy trying to fight for a spot at the table in the first place. We're too busy trying to find a place in the city, in our state, that we've been looking to come to for years. We can't have that. We need more housing. 500 units of affordable housing were lost downtown when the Harrison Towers were converted from affordable housing to condominiums. If you're one of the people living in those towers and you're complaining about the loss of your view from the new River Place Tower, I happily welcome the new 500 units of affordable housing that would replace what you made us lose. Sorry.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Great testimony.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Aaron Brown. I'm a registered lobbyist of the No More Freeway Expansions Coalition, here to speak about Volume 2B. The $450 million 1.8-mile freeway expansion is not an improvement for the people biking and walking in the neighborhood. Who says so? The local neighborhood association, for one, and all of the active transportation groups that closely are following the municipal plans. We submitted a letter this morning detailing our specific concerns about the schematics. I trust that you and your staff will have a time to read it later, so I won't reiterate the points. PPS board member Paul Anthony and Chris Smith already ran them over. I encourage you to look at the letter. It includes comments from 293 other Portlanders who, in their wordiness, committed an extra 31 pages of comments on why this is not an improvement. Instead of reading the letter, I'll tell you a quick story. This Tuesday morning, we were serving some donuts and coffee on the Flint Avenue Bridge. I got to talk to a lot of people, many of whom I usually just spar with on the internet, and realized that we actually had a lot in common, and we had a good time. We got to talk about Damian Lillard's jump shot and a bunch of other nice things, talk to folks that were concerned about the Harriet Tubman Middle School. And it reminded me of a really rainy Sunday Parkways 2 years ago. It was the first chance I personally had a chance, Mayor Wheeler, to speak with you. We had a conversation about the gas tax, and we were cordial, despite the fact I had been slagging you on Twitter all week. Commissioner Udaly, it was the first time I met you, and we had a conversation. I was delighted to learn that Reading Frenzy was a shop that I had visited, and it was cool to realize that you were running for office. That is what is at stake at this project, the ability to build communities where that sort of universe happens. When one looks at the project schematics, instead of ODOT's talking points, it's increasingly clear that this is a $500 million investment that is fundamentally antithetical to the type of community that we all claim that we are in support of. This project costs twice as much as a price tag to build sidewalks and crosswalks at every school in the entire Portland metropolitan region. Twice as much. Our conversations today about density, transportation, and urban form are ultimately a question of how logistically and geometrically we build a city that all of us can afford to live in, can safely get to our jobs, and walk our kids to school. I'll close with a quick comment. If ODOT did get this design wrong, if ODOT did just flub this one, it's out of date, whatever, how would it look different than the community opposition that you've heard over the past 6 months? Thank you very much, and we're honored to continue to work with you on this project.
Thanks, both of you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Next three, please.
First, was there John Crumrein on Altamira? I missed him. Okay, then we'll go with Marilyn Weber, Cliff Weber, and Greg Wimmer. And they'll be followed by 34, 35, and 36, Josiah Failing, Zoe Lynn Powers, and Christy White.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak to Amendment 2A, number 20 and 21. Mayor Wheeler, I hope you vote for your own amendment to save the Mount Hood view at Salmon Springs. When I heard that the last public view of Mount Hood in downtown was being blocked by tall buildings, I was astonished. I wondered who came up with that idea. Then I began to realize that our planning commission decided that the needs of the developers outweighed the public good. They decided that having equity in access to views was less important than making those views only for the rich. Their charts carefully measured private profits that would be lost if we lowered heights to save views, but they don't have a measurement for what having one view of Mount Hood downtown and having today's view of Mount Hood from the Vista Bridge means to Portland. If you use this logic, then you'd build tall buildings around Big Ben in London and the Eiffel Tower in Paris. These striking landmarks define London and Paris. What defines Portland is Mount Hood. So you would be blocking Portland's Eiffel Tower if you block the last view of Mount Hood downtown. There's a reason that we have publicly accessible views.